Chapter 10. I had thought that perhaps the morning's temple attendants would, quite understandably, choose to stay at home. But one small flower-bearer, awake before the adults in her household, arrived with a handful of pink-petaled weeds and stopped at the edge of the house, startled to see Anna Anda Mianai kneeling in front of our small icon of Ama'at. Lieutenant Orne was dressing on the upper floor.
"I can't serve today," she said to me,
her voice impassive, as her emotions were not. The morning was already warm and she was sweating. "You didn't touch any of the bodies," I said, as I adjusted her jacket collar, sure of the fact. It was the wrong thing to say. Four of my segments, two on the northern edge of the Four Temple, and two standing waist-deep in the lukewarm water and mud, lifted the body of Gentar's niece onto the ledge and carried her to the medic's house. On the ground floor of Lieutenant Orne's house, I said to the frightened, frozen flower-bearer, "It's all right." There was no sign of the water-bearer, and I was ineligible. "You'll have to at least bring the water, Lieutenant," I said above to Lieutenant Orne. "The flower-bearer is here, but the water-bearer isn't." For a few moments, Lieutenant Orne said nothing while I finished wiping her face. "Right," she said, and went downstairs and filled the bowl and brought it to the flower-bearer, where she stood next to me, still frightened, clutching her handful of pink petals. Lieutenant Orne held the water out to her, and she set the flowers down and washed her hands. But before she could pick the flowers up again, Anna Anda Mianai turned to look at her, and the child started back and grabbed my gloved hand with her bare one.
"You'll have to wash your hands again, citizen," I whispered, and with a bit more encouragement she did so, and picked up the flowers again and performed her part of the morning's ritual correctly, if nervously. No one else came. I was not surprised.
The medic, speaking to herself and not to me, though I stood 3 meters away from her, said, "Throat cut, obviously, but she was also poisoned." And then, with disgust and contempt, "A child of their own house. These people aren't civilized." Our one small attendant left, a gift from the Lord of the Ratch clutched in one hand, a pin in the shape of a four-petaled flower, each petal holding an enameled image of one of the four emanations. Anywhere else, a Ratcha'i who received one would treasure it, and wear it nearly constantly, a badge of having served in the temple with the Lord of the Ratch herself. This child would probably toss it in a box and forget about it. When she was out of sight, of Lieutenant Orne and the Lord of the Ratch, if not of me, Anna Anda Mianai turned to Lieutenant Orne and said,
"Aren't those weeds?"
A wave of embarrassment overcame Lieutenant Orne, mixed a moment later with disappointment and an intense anger I had never seen in her before.
"Not to the children, my lord."
She was unable to keep the edge out of her voice completely. Anna Anda Mianai's expression didn't change.
"This icon and this set of omens, they're your personal property, I think. Where are the ones that belong to the temple?"
"Begging my lord's pardon," Lieutenant Orne said, though I knew at this point she meant to do no such thing, and the fact was audible in her tone. "I use the funds for their purchase to supplement the term-end gifts for the temple attendants." She had also used her own money for the same purpose, but she didn't say that.
"I'm sending you back to Justice of Torren,"
said the Lord of the Raj.
"Your replacement will be here tomorrow."
Shame. A fresh flare of anger. And despair.
"Yes, my lord."
There wasn't much to pack. I could be ready to move in less than an hour. I spent the rest of the day delivering gifts to our temple attendants, who were all home. School had been cancelled, and hardly anyone came out onto the streets. "Lieutenant Orne doesn't know," I told each one.
if the new lieutenant will make different appointments, or if she'll give the year-end gifts without your having served a whole year. You should come to the house anyway, her first morning. The adults in each house eyed me silently, not inviting me in, and each time I laid the gift. Not the usual pair of gloves, which didn't yet matter much here, but a brightly coloured and patterned skirt, and a small box of tamarind sweets. Fresh fruit was customary, but there was no time to obtain any. I left each small stack of gifts in the street, on the edge of the house, and no one moved to take them or spoke any word to me. The divine spent an hour or two behind screens in the temple residence, and then emerged looking entirely unrested, and went into the temple, where she conferred with the junior priests. The bodies had been cleared away. I had offered to clean the blood, not knowing if my doing so would be permissible, but the priests had declined my assistance.
"Some of us," said the divine to me, still staring at the area floor where the dead had lain, "had forgotten what you are. Now they are reminded."
"I don't think you forgot, divine," I said.
"No."
She was silent for 2 seconds.
"Is the lieutenant going to see me before she leaves?"
"Possibly not, divine," I said. I was at that moment doing what I could to encourage Lieutenant Orne to sleep, something she badly needed to do but was finding difficult.
"It's probably better if she doesn't,"
the head priest said, bitterly. She looked at me then.
"It is unreasonable of me. I know it is. What else could she have done? It's easy for me to say, and I say it, that she could have chosen otherwise."
"She could have, divine," I acknowledged.
"What is it you Ratcha'ai say?"
I wasn't Ratcha'ai, but I didn't correct her, and she continued,
"Justice, propriety and benefit, isn't it? Let every act be just and proper and beneficial."
"Yes, divine."
"Was that just?"
Her voice trembled for just an instant, and I could hear she was on the edge of tears.
"Was it proper?"
"I don't know, divine."
"More to the point, who benefited?"
"No one, divine, so far as I can see."
"No one, really? Come, one esk, don't play the fool with me."
That look of betrayal on Jen Shinan's face, plainly directed at Anaanda Mianna'ai, had been obvious to everyone there. Still, I couldn't see what the Lord of the Ratch had stood to gain from those deaths. "They would have killed you, divine," I said. "You and anyone else they found undefended. Lieutenant Orne did what she could to prevent bloodshed last night. It wasn't her fault she failed."
"It was."
Her back was still to me.
"God forgive her for it. God forbid that I may ever be faced with such a choice."
She made an invocatory gesture.
"And you? What would you have done if the lieutenant had refused and the Lord of the Ratch ordered you to shoot her? Could you have? I thought that armor of yours was impenetrable."
"The Lord of the Ratch can force our armor down. But the code Anaanda Mianna'ai would have had to transmit to force down Lieutenant Orne's armor, or mine, or any other Ratcha'ai soldiers, would have to have been delivered over communications that had been blocked at the time. Still, speculating about such things does no good, divine," I said. "It didn't happen." The head priest turned and looked intently at me.
"You didn't answer the question."
It wasn't an easy question for me to answer. I had been in pieces, and at the time, only one segment had even known that such a thing was possible. That for an instant, Lieutenant Orne's life had hung, uncertain, on the outcome of that moment. I wasn't entirely sure that segment wouldn't have turned its gun on Anaanda Mianna'ai instead. It probably wouldn't have. "Divine, I am not a person."
If I had shot the Lord of the Ratch, nothing would have changed, I was sure. Except that not only would Lieutenant Orne still be dead, I would be destroyed. 2 Esk would take my place, or a new 1 Esk would be built with segments from Justice of Torrens' holds.
The ship's AI might find itself in some difficulty, though more likely my action would be blamed on my being cut off. People often think they would have made the noblest choice, but when they find themselves actually in such a situation, they discover matters aren't quite so simple.
As I said, God forbid. I will comfort myself with the delusion that you would have shot the Mianai bastard first.
Divine, I cautioned. She could say nothing in my hearing that might not eventually reach the ears of the Lord of the Ratch.
Let her hear. Tell her yourself. She instigated what happened last night. Whether the target was us, or the Danmind, or Lieutenant On, I don't know. I have my suspicions, which I'm not a fool.
Divine, I said. Whoever instigated last night's events, I don't think things happened the way they wished. I think they wanted open warfare between the upper and lower cities, though I don't understand why. And I think that was prevented when Den's Eye told Lieutenant Orne about the guns.
I think as you do,
said the head priest.
And I think Jen Shinan knew more, and that was why she died.
I'm sorry your temple was desecrated, Divine, I said. I wasn't particularly sorry Jen Shinan was dead, but I didn't say so. The Divine turned away from me again.
I'm sure you have a lot to do, getting ready to leave. Lieutenant On needn't trouble herself calling on me. You can give her my farewells yourself.
She walked away from me, not waiting for any acknowledgement. Lieutenant Skaiat arrived for supper with a bottle of arak and 2 7 isas.
Your relief won't even reach Kudvez until midday, she said, breaking the seal on the bottle.
Meanwhile, the 7 isas stood stiff and uncomfortable on the ground floor. They had arrived just before I'd restored communications. They'd seen the dead in the Temple of Ikt, had guessed without being told what had happened, and they had only been out of the holds for the last 2 years. They hadn't seen the annexation itself. All of Orz, upper and lower, was similarly quiet, similarly tense. When people left their houses, they avoided looking at me or speaking to me. Mostly they only went out to visit the temple, where the priests led prayers for the dead. A few Tanmind even came down from the upper city and stood quietly at the edges of the small crowd. I kept myself in the shadows, not wanting to distract or distress any further.
Tell me you didn't almost refuse, said Lieutenant Skaiat,
in the house on the upper floor, with Lieutenant Orne, behind screens. They sat on fungal-smelling cushions facing each other.
I know you, Orne. I swear, when I heard what 7 Issa saw when they got to the temple, I was afraid I'd hear next that you were dead. Tell me you didn't.
I didn't, said Lieutenant Orne, miserable and guilty. Her voice bitter.
You can see I didn't.
I can't see that. Not at all.
Lieutenant Skaiat poured a hefty slug of liquor into the cup I held out, and I handed it to Lieutenant Orne.
Neither can one ask, or it wouldn't be so silent this evening.
She looked at the nearest segment.
Did the Lord of the Ratch forbid you to sing?
No, Lieutenant. I hadn't wanted to disturb Anna Anda Miatnaai when she was here, or interrupt what sleep Lieutenant Orne could get. And anyway, I hadn't much felt like it. Lieutenant Skaiat made a frustrated sound and turned back to Lieutenant Orne.
If you'd refused, nothing would have changed except you'd be dead too. You did what you had to, and the idiots, hairs cock, those idiots. They should have known better.
Lieutenant Orne stared at the cup in her hand, not moving.
I know you, Orne. If you're going to do something that crazy, save it for when it'll make a difference.
Like Mercy of Sarse won Amma at one.
She was talking about events at Ime, about the soldier who had refused her order, led that mutiny 5 years before.
She made a difference, at least. Listen, Orne, you and I both know something was going on. You and I both know that what happened last night doesn't make sense unless...
She stopped.
Lieutenant Orne set her cup of arak down hard. Liquor sloshed over the lip of the cup.
Unless what? How does it make sense?
Here.
Lieutenant Skaiat picked up the cup and pressed it into Lieutenant Orne's hand.
Drink this, and I'll explain. At least as much as makes sense to me. You know how annexations work? I mean, yes. They work by sheer undeniable force. But after? After the executions and the transportations and once all the last bits of idiots who think they can fight back are cleaned up. Once all that's done, we fit whoever's left into Ratcha'i society. They form up into houses and take clientage, and in a generation or two, they're as Ratcha'i as anybody. And mostly that happens because we go to the top of the local hierarchy. There pretty much always is one, and offer them all sorts of benefits in exchange for behaving like citizens. Offer them clientage contracts, which allows them to offer contracts to whoever is below them, and before you know it, the whole local setup is tied into Ratcha'i society with minimal disruption.
Lieutenant Orne made an impatient gesture. She already knew this.
What does this have to do with... You fucked that up.
I...
What you did worked. And the local Tanmind were going to have to swallow that, fair enough. If I'd done what you did, gone straight to the Orsian priest, set up a house in the lower city instead of using the police station and jail already built in the upper city, set about making alliances with lower city authorities and ignoring... I didn't ignore anyone,
Lieutenant Orne protested.
Lieutenant Skaiat waved her protest away.
And ignoring what anyone else would have seen as the natural local hierarchy. Your house can't afford to offer clientage to anyone here. Yet. Neither you nor I can make any contracts with anyone. For now. We had to exempt ourselves from our houses' contracts and take clientage directly from Anna and Amiatna'i while we serve. But we still have those family connections. And those families can use connections we make now, even if we can't. And we can certainly use them when we retire. Getting your feet on the ground during an annexation is the one sure way to increase your house's financial and social standing. Which is fine, until the wrong person does it. We tell ourselves that everything is the way Amma'at wants it to be, that everything that is because of God. So if we're wealthy and respected, that's how things should be. The aptitudes prove that it's all just, that everyone gets what they deserve, and when the right people test into the right careers, that just goes to show how right it all is.
I'm not the right people.
Lieutenant Orne set down her empty cup, and Lieutenant Skaiat refilled it.
You're only one of thousands, but you're a noticeable one to someone, and this annexation is different. It's the last one. Last chance to grab property, to make connections on the sort of scale that upper houses have always been accustomed to. They don't like to see any of those last chances go to houses like yours. And to make it worse, you're subverting the local hierarchy.
I use the local hierarchy.
Lieutenants, I cautioned. Lieutenant Orne's outburst had been loud enough to be heard in the street, if anyone had been on the street this evening.
If the Tanmind were running things here, that was as things must be in Amma'at's mind, right?
But they...
Lieutenant Orne stopped. I wasn't sure what she'd been about to say. Perhaps that they had imposed their authority over Orz relatively recently. Perhaps that they were in Orz a numerical minority, and Lieutenant Orne's goal had been to reach the largest number of people she could.
Careful,
warned Lieutenant Skaiat, though Lieutenant Orne hadn't needed the warning. Any Ratcha'i soldier knew not to speak without thinking.
If you hadn't found those weapons, someone would have had an excuse not only to toss you out of Orz, but to come down hard on the Orzians and favour the upper city, restoring the universe to its proper order. And then, of course, anyone inclined could have used the incident as an example of how soft we've gotten. If we'd stuck to so-called impartial aptitudes testing, if we'd executed more people, if we still made ancillaries...
I have ancillaries,
Lieutenant Orne pointed out.
Lieutenant Skaiat shrugged. Everything else would have fit. They could ignore that. They'll ignore anything that doesn't get them what they want, and what they want is anything they can grab.
She seemed so calm, even almost relaxed. I was used to not seeing data from Lieutenant Sky yet, but this disjunction between her demeanor and the seriousness of the situation...
Lieutenant Orne's still extreme distress, and, to be honest, my own discomfort at events, made her seem oddly flat and unreal to me.
I understand Jen Shinan's part in this, Lieutenant Orne said. I do, I get that. But I don't understand how anyone else would benefit.
The question she couldn't ask directly was, of course, why Anna and Amiantnaai would be involved. Or why she would want to return to some previous proper order, given she herself had certainly approved any changes. And why, if she wanted such a thing, she didn't merely order the thing she desired. If questioned, both lieutenants could and likely would say they weren't speaking of the Lord of the Ratch, but about some unknown person who must be involved. But I was certain that wouldn't hold up under an interrogation with drugs.
Fortunately, such an event was unlikely. And I don't see why anyone with that sort of access couldn't just order me gone and put someone they preferred in my place, if that was all they wanted.
Maybe that wasn't all they wanted, answered Lieutenant Skaiat. But clearly, someone did at the very least want those things, and thought they would benefit from doing it this particular way. And you did as much as you could to avoid people getting killed. Anything else wouldn't have made any difference.
She emptied her own cup.
You're going to stay in touch with me, she said.
Not a question, not a request. And then more gently.
I'll miss you.
For a moment I thought Lieutenant Orne might cry again.
Who's replacing me?
Lieutenant Skyhat named an officer and a ship.
Human troops, then?
Lieutenant Orne was momentarily disquieted, and then sighed, frustrated. I imagine she was remembering that Orz was no longer her problem.
I know, said Lieutenant Skyat. I'll talk to her. You watch yourself. Now annexations are a thing of the past, ancillary troop carriers are crowded with useless daughters of prestigious houses who can't be assigned to anything lower.
Lieutenant Orne frowned, clearly wanting to argue, thinking maybe of her fellow Esk lieutenants, or of herself. Lieutenant Skyat saw her expression and smiled ruefully.
Well, Dariette is all right. It's the rest I'm warning you to look out for. Very high opinions of themselves and very little to justify it.
Skyat had met some of them during the annexation, had always been entirely correctly polite to them.
You don't need to tell me that, said Lieutenant Orne.
Lieutenant Skyat poured more arak, and for the rest of the night their conversation was the sort that needs no reporting. At length, Lieutenant Orne slept again, and by the time she woke, I had hired boats to take us to the mouth of the river near Kudvez and loaded them with our scant luggage and my dead segment. In Kudvez, the mechanism that controlled its armor and a few other bits of tech would be removed for another use.
If you're going to do something that crazy, save it for when it'll make a difference, Lieutenant Skyat had said.
And I had agreed. I still agree. The problem is, knowing when what you're about to do will make a difference. I'm not only speaking of the small actions that cumulatively, over time, or in great numbers, steer the course of events in ways too chaotic or subtle to trace. The single word that directs a person's fate, and ultimately the fates of those she comes in contact with, is of course a common subject of entertainments and moralizing stories, but if everyone were to consider all the possible consequences of all one's possible choices, no one would move a millimeter, or even dare to breathe for fear of the ultimate results. I mean, on a larger and more obvious scale. In the way that Anna Andamiannaai herself determined the fates of whole peoples, or the way my own actions could mean life or death for thousands, or merely 83, huddled in the Temple of Ikt. Surrounded. I ask myself, as surely Lieutenant Orne asked herself, what would have been the consequences of refusing the order to fire? Straightforwardly, obviously, her own death would have been an immediate consequence. And then immediately afterward, those 83 people would have died, because I would have shot them at Anna Andamiatna I's direct order. No difference, except Lieutenant Orne would be dead. The omens had been cast and their trajectories were straightforward, calculable, direct and clear. But neither Lieutenant Orne nor the Lord of the Ratch knew that in that moment, had one disk shifted just slightly, the whole pattern might have landed differently. Sometimes when omens are cast, one flies or rolls off where you didn't expect and throws the whole pattern out of shape. Had Lieutenant Orne chosen differently, that one segment, cut off, disoriented and yes horrified at the thought of shooting Lieutenant Orne, might have turned its gun on Miatnai instead. What then? Ultimately, such an action would only have delayed Lieutenant Orne's death and ensured my own, one Esk's, destruction. Which, since I didn't exist as any sort of individual, was not distressing to me. But the death of those 83 people would have been delayed. Lieutenant Skaiat would have been forced to arrest Lieutenant Orne. I am convinced she would not have shot her, though she would have been legally justified in doing so. But she would not have shot the Tanmind, because Mina Ai would not have been there to give the order, and Jen Shinan would have had time and opportunity to say whatever it was that the Lord of the Ratch had, as things actually happened, prevented her from saying. What difference would that have made? Perhaps a great deal of difference. Perhaps none at all. There are too many unknowns, too many apparently predictable people who are in reality balanced on a knife edge, or whose trajectories might be easily changed if only I knew. If you're going to do something that crazy, save it for when it'll make a difference. But absent near omniscience, there's no way to know when that is. You can only make your best approximate calculation. You can only make your throw and try to puzzle out the results afterward.